Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. My name is Nick Campbell, and with me today I have Chad Ashley.
Hey, everybody.
And Chris Schmidt.
Hello, hello.
How are you guys? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
What's in the news these days? I hear there was a debate or something. I don't really know about it.
No, you're mistaken.
Oh yeah, they canceled that.
Yeah.
How you guys been?
Good. Yeah. Fall is here.
Chad, for those of us not looking at this, has a nice puffy jacket on. I thought your render farm would keep you warmer than that.
Well, I haven't been rendering lately. I've been working on the new site, so without the machine rendering, my office gets cold.
Now, can you just kick off a big 4K render and just kind of warm your hands next to it, or what?
I could, actually.
Was that really a product at like NAB or SIGGRAPH, right, where people were shipping render farms?
So, yeah, that's right. Where was that? In the UK or something? Like, you essentially get a render farm that looks like a radiator for your apartment, and you pay them, and they'll come in, and they'll put it in your house, and you just get free heat out of it. And then...
I'm not kidding.
So you get free heat, and like, what's really happening? I mean, here's the thing: like, it's confusing to some people. So, like, do I have to render on my heater? Like, no. Okay, that's what people are doing all over the world. It's like splitting up the render across all these different machines that are sitting in people's houses. The people in the houses might not even know what this thing is, but the idea is to use the heat that these render farms are generating to actually heat your house.
I love it.
It's a great idea, but
that sounds like one of those ideas that's really, it's a fun idea to sit around and talk to your friends about, but like a terrible idea in execution. It's like, why do we have this giant warehouse with all this air conditioning when people need heat? But it's like, but can you really do that? Can you really trust putting a render farm in somebody's house somewhere?
Well, and then how many would you need before it actually becomes useful, you know? And how hard would that – it's got to be a crazy hard thing to roll that out, you know, unless you're building a whole subdivision and you're going to go all in with this thing and every house is going to have them, then that's great. But, like, if you're trying to get people to essentially adopt it, then that's got to be difficult. Because I learned that you have to have one. It's not like you have just one in your house and it's feeding the heat throughout the whole house. You have to have one in every room.
Oh, geez.
So,
no, never mind.
So, like, if in a climate like, you know, in Chicago, like, that would be ridiculous. It's like, what am I going to have? Like, it would be insane. But the upside to them is that I guess they're, like, all smart. So they're, like, already, you know, hooked up like a Nest kind of system. So that's kind of cool. Like, it'll kick on when you walk in the room and all that sort of thing. But I just couldn't imagine having one of those in every room of my house. That would get a little bit crazy.
Well, distributed computing is always an interesting idea. I mean, we all have between our phones and our computers and the laptop in the corner and my old phone. Like, we all have these really incredible chips, mostly just sitting here doing nothing for like 99% of their day in their life. And if we could start to distribute and have access to even 10% more of, like, while they're sitting their time, we could do some serious stuff. I mean, that's a little bit of the idea behind the, like, SETI project and some other distributed kind of, like, organization, you know, rendering projects. But imagine if it was, you know, an Arnold farm. Like,
right.
Like, iPhone in the world rendering Arnold for you.
What's my phone doing right now? It's odd.
Why is it so hot?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know they're not designed to run all day long, but even, you know, an extra, even just double their capacity would give them something. I mean, that reminds me of a hard drive project somebody, maybe they're still selling these, but the idea is that rather than back up everything online on a cloud and trust that all my data will be there later, it's kind of like this. Like, I'll have a hard drive on my machine hooked up, and then Chad, you have a hard drive on your machine that's hooked up. And we kind of like handshake and partner up and say, all right, you're going to store my data on your machine and I'm going to store your data on my machine. It's going to be all encrypted. I can't go read your files. But if your house blows up, you have a backup and it's safe with me. And we can meet up down the road and share data.
Yeah. Why isn't there, maybe there is, and somebody will tell us, but why isn't there like a way to like say, okay, the three of us are going to team up our machines and create this like processing co-op And every time I hit render, if you're not working on your machine, I'm going to render. It's going to render on your machine. You know what I mean? Like, if you could join this like group of people with really good machines and then agree to like every, you know, whatever the software runs or something, like maybe you walk away for 10 minutes, any one of the people in your little render community could use your machine. That's kind of a cool idea.
I'll tell you what we did. You know, Chris, that was at Bomb Camp right up until it left. I think you met Chris that was working there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Chet. Yeah. He had a beast of a machine. He had Chris, do you remember the specs on that thing? I mean, it was a mini.
I don't know.
It was a kegerator or larger size box, and I think it had like the one or two unit, like you know, sliding.
Yeah, he had a rack. He had a rack.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, so he had like eight or ten blades. Plus, he had I don't know how many video cards running Octane, like six or eight, something crazy.
Yeah, he's got a lot.
And he kind of said the same thing, which is like, hey, this is sitting here for most of its day, and I'm just working on it in After Effects. If you ever want to render something on it, let's set up a Dropbox account that is tied to it. And I think, Chris, you guys even wrote a little script, right, to run this?
We wrote a whole plugin to do it. So and then we actually got working, but we never utilized it, so
we
kind of just
let it
die.
And so here's the concept, Chad. Maybe we can maybe we could do this with your machine.
Invention. Hey, wait a minute.
Hey, you need the heat. So what we did is we saved a project to it, and I think he got a ping or something that said,
No,
hey.
He did. We made it so he didn't have to get anything. He had if he was turned the checkbox on, if he said yes, let it run, every you know half a minute or something, it would check Dropbox. If it had the file, it would take it and then save the folder properly, pull it out, put it in the completed thing, render it all out, and he wouldn't even have to do anything.
And then it would get back onto the Dropbox.
That should be a thing. You know what I mean? Like if you like almost like how there's really not a it's almost like a group, like a Facebook group, I guess would be the best way to put it.
It's a co-op.
Yeah, it's like a render co-op where like, you know, you and your friend, you and your, you know, 10 friends that have awesome machines, you basically join forces and agree to flip a switch when you go to bed at night if you want to contribute to your co-op or not. I mean, somebody out there should make that.
It's built. Chris and the brothers.
Well, that's local. I'm talking about like you know,
distributed.
If I could do it with somebody who has like an amazing machine that I'm friends with in, I don't know, England or something.
I mean, I think that's the idea behind a lot of these, you know, render farms that are popping up that are lower cost too. Is I mean, as the prices go down, this becomes more of a thing where buddies help, but then you're relying on their internet and their, you know, all this stuff. And,
right.
And a render
farm,
they're just there making sure it gets done, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely a safer bet if you're doing a job. Like, for sure. Like, I wouldn't want to depend on my friend's machine or, God forbid, you know, melt their machine down with a heavy render or something.
Right.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, and the networking stuff. This is not something we really want to get into. We weren't even looking at networking. It's like if something appears in this Dropbox folder, like all we're looking at is a folder.
Yeah, back even at Digital Kitchen years for me, that was 05, 06 through 09. They didn't have Team Render as it is, Cinema 4D, but they had NetRender.
NetRender,
you could set up the account on all the machines, and I installed the client on everyone's machines, and basically that was the game we played there, which was like, hey, this machine's empty or whatever, that we had a lot of empty machines for like when freelancers came in, we just leave it running. I could send it to NetRender and get you know 15 machines running on it, and man, that was the dream, having just surrounded by Max burning. And getting frames back. And now a Team Render, I mean, I use that here in my office. I have the iMac running, and then my Mac Pro, the 12 core, is still a fast machine. That's out there just for Team Render. I hit Team Render, it all blast right to my viewport. It's that's part of the love. But now with Octane and Arnold, it gets a little trickier with all the licensing and
especially
all that stuff.
Octane for sure, because you know it's not very many people have enough GPU systems to even be able to warrant rendering out onto another machine. I mean, you can do it with Team Render, just like you can with Arnold. When I was during my last days at DK, we had a pretty big farm. We had, I think, about 110 machines all running Deadline. And Deadline is a piece of software dedicated to managing a render farm. It would manage 3ds Max, Maya, Cinema 4D, After Effects, all that stuff. It would manage it for you. So you'd submit through this thing and it would take care of it. And it was definitely like, we used our farm a lot, but there was lots of times where it wasn't being used. We didn't have a big job or whatever. And just imagine like how much it cost to have a room. Number one, just a dedicated room in a space to hold this stuff. Then you had to cool it constantly. Then you had to power it all the time. So if it's not rendering, it's not doing a job, it's actually not making money. It's losing money. And so you think about like, okay, well, you know, I remember I talked to somebody and they were like, what if there was a way for studios that had render farms to rent their render farms when they weren't busy? And, you know, then it, yeah, but then there's a security thing. And like, it's just such a not a very efficient or elegant thing, which is render farms. They're just not efficient or elegant. You know, they're just a bunch of machines sitting in a room. So to own one is like kind of crazy to me.
Yeah, I thought about
unless you're
building
out your own thing.
Yeah, like getting a bunch of, you know, Mac minis or even a PC build and just getting it. But then it's, you're introducing so much overhead of like updates, and every time there's a new plugin update, and we have our own plugins, and every time we update it, I got to make sure the farm's updated.
It's a huge job
that I don't want, you know?
Totally. And, that's exactly why I like the places like Pixelplow, you know, that we talked about last time and we announced on our site, because like I don't want to have to do that, dude.
Right.
Like I don't want to have to. I'll gladly pay, you know, $20 for a render if it means I don't have to maintain this other 10 machines in my office.
Yeah.
Well, I think that actually speaks to something that's happening everywhere, which is a lot of wasted capacity all over the place. So if you even look at something like Uber or Airbnb, what they're solving is this wasted capacity problem, which is, hey, your car is sitting in your garage 99% of its life or whatever, 90% of its life. It's in a parking lot or in a garage. Why not, A, go use it and actually make money with it when you have free time? And I think eventually, as automated, you know, driving and stuff starts popping up, it's going to be, don't own a car. Like, just call when you need, like, call when you need a car.
Well, I've talked to you about this, Nick, but Tesla's plan, their long-term plan says if you own Teslas and they have the auto drive, your Tesla, when you're not driving it, can be like, okay, I'm going off to work now, and then it's going to go drive all night.
Your car has a job.
And yeah, your car can pay you while you're not
using it. That's hilarious.
So the people who do have cars, they will work, and the people who don't, you know, and then how many people don't need cars anymore? And if that reduces the price, like if taxis get cheap enough, like even now, Ubers are like, yeah, it's easy enough and cheap enough that if there's like the slightest reason to not drive, I'll just take an Uber.
I will make that deal anytime, because you know what? Sometimes I would like a really fun little fast car to show up for me to drive around. And sometimes I actually need to like go haul a pinball machine. Like, wouldn't it be really great to decide what car is going to show up today instead of picking the one picking the one car that I have to use for the next 10 years?
No, I mean, that makes sense. But for families and people that don't live in cities, which is the majority of the country,
isn't it 50-50?
I don't know. Like, I still feel like, you know, you need a car. Like, you need a way to go pick somebody up or go do this or, you know, run that errand. And it's just not like, it's just the Ubers and the Lyfts just aren't in enough places to make that a thing.
Oh, no, totally. But the point being is this is the computational thing you guys were just talking about. Everybody has a car in their garage. Some people have two and maybe even more that are not doing stuff 90% of the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So this is all just – this is wasted.
There's and that's – like I love that idea like as a problem that businesses can solve or are solving now, which is like what you said about finding these areas that are just completely like outdated and like these maybe the way that they're being sold or way that they're being implemented just don't make sense anymore. And another one completely separate from cars and our mattresses. Like, I don't know if you guys, if you're like me, I feel like I get served advertising for mattresses like constantly. And now there's
podcast
like,
these
days. There's like, and I'm like, what is going on? Well, I guess, and I did some research into it because I was curious about it. And
I heard an NPR story about this, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you really?
Yep.
So, yeah, it's like this really old business model where, you know, imagine, like, think about this. Like, to buy a mattress right now, like, if you, let's say you didn't know about anything about these online mattress places, you would go to a mattress store and a slimy, well, not slimy, I don't want to say slimy, but like a salesy guy will walk up to you and be like, hey, what are you looking for? You like hard, soft? And then 10 minutes, you're supposed to decide on what you're going to sleep on for the next 5 years. And that's really a messed up business model. Like the fact that I have to go there and like I don't get to try it out for a few nights and I don't know if it's going to work. I mean, that whole, so they completely changed it. Like you find all these companies like, Purple and what's the other one I always get ads for?
We got a Casper. Love it.
Yeah, so like that.
This is not another podcast sponsorship.
No, we're not sponsoring. We're just interested in businesses that are solving these kinds of problems where they see an antiquated model and they change it. And like that's exciting to me when people do that. And
well, I'm curious about that mattress thing because that NPR story I had heard was all about. The reason there's so many mattress stores and you still get so many advertisements is mattresses are one of the somewhat internet-proof things. Like, you don't want to just order a mattress online without having tried it or at least lied down in it. So you go to a store and you try out the mattress. Otherwise, you can't try it out. Like, shirts and stuff, you can see pictures, you know your measurements. But mattress, like, you kind of want to try that out. So mattress stores are somewhat internet-proof.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like I think that I disagree with that. Number one, because if you go to a store and you just lay down on one, you're like not really sleeping, and then you're just sitting there like, yeah, I guess this is okay, and then you hope that it works. But like these other companies, what they're doing is they're saying we're going to ship you the mattress, and if you don't like it, we will come pick it up from you, and we will give it to a homeless shelter. Or something. They don't like burn it, or they don't like, you know, trash it or anything. Like they give it to a place that needs it, and you get to sleep on it for most of them. I think are like 30 days or something. I don't know why we're talking about this.
No, this is good.
It's
I mean,
so
this
strange.
It's
I want to do it because
right?
I want to do it just because I'm all about like I love businesses that look at things in a different way like that, which is why nice segue that I do the Google Fi thing.
Wait, before you fully segue,
how many
of those mattress online places do you think you could get a 30-day trial until you can just cycle around and never actually own a bed?
I mean, if you really want to go through the hassle of hauling a mattress up to your bedroom and unwrapping it every 30 days, then I guess you could do it endlessly. Well, I mean, figure if you – there's like at least four of them, I think, that'll do it. So there's 30 – 4 months recovered, there's 120 days right there.
Well, a lot of them are 100-day trials.
100-day? Oh, there you go.
Yeah, we got that covered.
I think you should do that. I'll go a whole year.
We got a new documentary Chris is making.
this 100-month period or 100-day period.
It's called This Ain't My Bed.
I have not slept worse in a year. Anyway, but yeah, I love that. I love that.
So you were mentioning a little bit about your Wi-Fi thing earlier. I'm interested. What is this plan you're on?
Okay, so now this is going to sound like I'm going to endorse it because I like it. And you know, if you don't agree, that's totally fine. Here's the thing.
Hey,
like,
let me tell you, we're not paid to do any advertising.
We haven't gotten a penny on any of this.
This Starbucks is delicious.
No, I've got my McDonald's cup here, but that's just because I always get, I'll get iced tea and then use their cup for 2 weeks because
taster's
choice. I don't even
right
want
here,
their
baby.
Iced tea, but it keeps my drinks cold. And yeah, then I just throw it out.
The beverage dollars are rolling in right now.
I got super sick of cell phone carriers. I think it's just the biggest ripoff in my everyday kind of like bill paying, like things that you need to live. I feel like that's one of the areas that I'm just like, I feel like I'm getting screwed like all the time. And especially when I want to get a new phone or if I want to, you know, travel, you know, internationally. The fact that I have to, like, you know, call them up and be like, hey, I'm going to be international. And they're like, oh, okay. And if you don't do that, you end up paying all these crazy fees and whatnot. So I was on an iPhone 6. And when I left EK, I was like, I'm going to try this Google Fi network. Okay, so what Google Fi is Google Fi basically is their own cellular network that uses T-Mobile. I think it's T-Mobile, Sprint, and someone else. Maybe, I don't know. They have three. So they basically piggyback off of three networks. And what's great about it is you pay $20 a month, and then you get $10 for every gig on top of that. And then, so right now, I am paying the $20 for the line. And the phone, you have to get a Google Fi phone, which is unlocked, which is great. So you own the phone outright. You're not like paying $25 a month for your phone or whatever kind of craziness. And essentially, whatever you don't use in terms of data, you actually get that money back on your next bill. So, and it uses Wi-Fi all the time. So basically, if I'm like, get a call right now, it would be like through my Wi-Fi. It's not going to be through the cell. And essentially what that means is that it's smart because all of us are at home on Wi-Fi anyway, most of the time, or you're at work on Wi-Fi. Like, why should my calls be coming through the cell towers? Like, why couldn't they just come through this Wi-Fi? Like, that's what was interesting to me about this idea. And so I started using it. I love it. And so, like, right now, I have this little app here. I don't know if you can see it, but so I have I have 11 days left in my billing cycle, and I've only used 84.84% of my allotted data. So I actually use this little dial as, like, I try to, like, get as low as I can, so I'll get, like, 10 or 20 bucks off my next month. The lowest I've paid for my phone bill, I think, was about $25. And that's that's insane, dude. Like, that's why I'm thinking, like, that's another business that's, like, completely messed up. Like, it's just the way that it works is messed up. Like, the fact that, like, I'm paying, you know, for, I don't know what I was paying before. It was like 120 something. And, you know, I didn't own the phone. I was paying off the phone, like I was renting the phone, or, you know, the iPhone 6. Yep. And I just got sick of it, man. I just got sick of giving money to these people. So I switched.
Is that a Google phone only thing?
Yeah, this is a Nexus phone, but if you get the new Google Pixel phone, it'll work with that too. And, so yeah, you just buy the phone. Like, I own this phone. Like, I could buy another phone and put the SIM card in it, and I'd be on my way. And it's free international too. So, like, I was going, when I got it, I was doing a lot of travel, internationally, and you don't have to call them up and warn them. You don't have to pay any fees. It just works.
Interesting.
So it's just another business that I'm just like, I wish they had a family plan. They don't have a family plan yet, but I think that's coming. So right now it's just me, like my wife and stuff. She's not on that yet. I think she's like really likes the iPhone, so I don't think she would ever switch. But
I use so much data though. I'd be afraid. Like,
I don't think you would though, because like I thought I did too. Like, because I was I mean, are you in the AT&T unlimited grandfathered?
So I was in AT&T. Grandfathered limited. I was on it.
I was too.
And I was averaged about 3 to 5 gigs a month. Mm-hmm. And I did the math, and what I ended up doing was I got a Sprint card, iFi or whatever they call that thing. And I was paying for Sprint because I traveled so much, and I still travel quite a lot. And every time I was out and about, I needed basically my own Wi-Fi connection. And I can't trust local, you know, Wi-Fi at like Starbucks or McDonald's because it's open, right? So I need a private internet connection. And so I always relied on Sprint for that. And then I'd have my unlimited card. But then I'm like, well, I have to carry both of these devices around. I got to keep them charged. And so I scrapped the Sprint. And I went all iPhone, all data through the phone. And then anytime I need a hotspot, I just flip it on. The problem is I had to get rid of my unlimited to get hotspot.
That's the situation I'm in right now.
That's what happened to me, dude. Like, I was unlimited on AT&T grandfathered in, and then like the second you want to do one little tweak to your plan, they're like, well, you can't be this anymore. And I'm like, yep. What? But then honestly, like, you're like, I looked at that unlimited and I was like, I'm not even using that much. I was using about the same as you. I was like 1 to 3 gigs a month. And that was mostly because I wasn't hooked into Wi-Fi on places that I could have been.
Right.
And that's the other thing about this phone too. It has this like Wi-Fi assistant where like if you're walking like next to a Starbucks and they have an open Wi-Fi, it'll automatically do an encrypted connection for you behind the scenes. So anytime you're walking near an open Wi-Fi, it says, cool, I'm going to connect to this. I'm going to encrypt it. Nobody knows what's going in or out. I'm just using this network. So it just, it's smart that way. But yeah, I guess back when I was commuting and on Spotify or whatever every day driving to and from Chicago, I would use more data than I am now. But like, which makes sense. If you're commuting and you're watching Netflix or whatever, you know, you might have to do one of those kind of Verizon unlimited data plans. But if you're working from home like me and maybe you're on Wi-Fi 90% of your day, then why are you paying $150 a month? Like, that's just insane. Anyway, what are you going to do, Chris?
What's your plan, Chris? What's your angle on this?
I'm still just grandfathered in to the plan you said you just got rid of. So oh, yeah. I still have the old AT&T. I still have unlimited. And I was looking at it. It's like, how much do I use this? Like, not very much. It's like, yeah. And it keeps going up. They keep raising it slowly.
Yeah.
So it's like it used to be like 70 and then it went to 80 and then it went to 90. Now it's like 120 or whatever.
I feel like that the cell phone business is going to be disrupted by things like Google Fi, the same way that the television industry is being disrupted by Netflix and streaming.
Dude, I want to rant for that for a second.
All right, let's hear it.
All right, I'm only thing internet I can get is Comcast, and everybody like Comcast is pretty awful. Like the service is pretty awful. I'm actually impressed when you talk to them on the phone. I've always gotten like the nicest like mom lady on the phone, and they're super helpful and they know what they're talking about. But the service is just like not good. It drops out. Like Nick was even saying, I wasn't streaming that well over the thing the last two times. And I'm paying for like the highest grade I can possibly get. But on top of that, they're like, oh, like if you want to get a better deal, you have to get the TV package too. And I'm like, I don't watch TV. And they're like, well, it's cheaper if you get it with TV. I'm like, okay, fine. Yeah. Send me the TV box. I did not even take the cable box out of the cardboard. It's sitting behind my television in the box so that I can get my internet cheaper. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's backwards.
Like, they're
man.
So desperate to keep that going. Because, yeah. I mean, even that, I have to think that, like, Comcast doesn't even care if you're watching. They want
they
to don't. Tell.
They just want the number.
They want the number. They're like, hey, advertisers, like, we've shipped out, like, however many millions of boxes and, like, wasted hardware.
Well, like, I haven't had any problem. I have Xfinity too, and I think the Xfinity problems are something in Cook County, because in Lake County where I'm at, like, I haven't had any dropouts or anything like that. I feel like it's something with the. It must be like really complicated to run cable in a city, which I imagine it probably is to like keep track of it all. But I haven't had that problem. But it sucks that they're the only thing you can do. Like that's your only choice.
Yep. I actually got excited because apparently this other place is going to be running some fiber. And I immediately called them and they're like, oh, no, like we're not in your spot yet.
Well, there was I remember Google Fiber was supposed to come to Chicago. And I think they're in a few other cities. Like I forget what cities they're in. But that was something that one of my good friends works actually for Xfinity. And he's like a fiber tech guru, fiber guy. And it is a pretty insanely complex system that I imagine has a lot of places that where things can go wrong. But it would be nice to have some competition to kind of drive the rates down or make better features or something. But there's no competition. I had AT&T for Wi-Fi for a while, and that was the worst. Like that was like. I did not know how bad my Wi-Fi was or any of my internet connection was until I went to Xfinity, and now I'm like, oh my god, this is what it could be. And I'm able to actually watch shows and not have them be completely compressed, and it is pretty rad. But
yeah, I've had overall good luck with Comcast over the years. At least we didn't at our old studio.
Ed Bond.
And the guy that ran it, the guy that ran it was always on the phone with them. But
like two times a week.
Yeah, my house and office, you know, this office here where I am now. And I've always had pretty good luck. It's expensive, but it as long as it's working and I can, you know, get my job done, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm gonna look into this. This will be my homework. Look into these other data plans because I'm using too much.
I mean, you really, for me too, like some people are just like so, like they'll never get out of the iPhone ecosystem, and I'm not really that person because you know me, I don't even have a Mac. I think actually I take that back. I have a Mac Mini downstairs, but so for me it wasn't a big deal for my ecosystem to try a different OS for my phone. But yeah, it is if you're an iPhone person, you're kind of screwed. Like there's nothing like that for the iPhone.
Never mind.
I know, I'm sorry, man. I wish I had better news for you.
Pay my $150 bill, whatever it is.
Yeah, no. It's so ridiculous, though.
Man, so we talked about your jacket and about your render farm and never got into any GSG news.
Oh, yeah, we should probably do that.
We jumped right over all
Everybody's
that stuff.
Like, why are they, what are they talking about?
This is all the preamble. This is
yeah, they're like, skip,
up.
Skip, skip, skip.
Should we start recording now?
Yeah, now we start.
Here's the real show.
Well, so this is a big week. We got Ask GSG Season 3 starting up.
Yeah. Season 3, Episode 1 with special guest Chad Ashley.
Hello.
Chad is going to be on the Wednesday, right?
On the Wednesday.
I'll be there.
All right. So if you're listening to this before, what is that, the 12th? October 12th.
Yep.
Head over to our Twitch page and bring your... Listen, this is kind of how this whole thing started. People email us, tweeted us questions about Cinema 4D, and there's so much stuff to learn and teach and do all that stuff, and there was no central place to do that, and I always felt bad, like, you know, I wish we could answer more of your questions. And Chris and I, what was that, a couple years ago now, kind of brainstorming brainstorming like, how do you easily go to one place to ask Cinema 4D questions? And so we brainstormed this live show, and now we're on our third season. So if you ever had a question for us, bring it Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central. And if you're listening to this after October 12th, it should still be going on. Last year, you went on for the entire season, went until the spring, right, Chris?
Yeah, it went for a long time, 39 episodes. We did not skimp.
Yeah, tons of questions and answers. And basically, you're going to see us break stuff down. So if you ever wanted to see people that... you know, someone like Chris that knows a lot of the different parts of Cinema 4D, start to brainstorm how to do, you know, looks or how to break a project down. You could see kind of where, how he thinks about it step by step. That's the fun part to me, is it's not all pre-made and then we come out with the tutorial. It's kind of the live brainstorming process of like how this stuff gets made, you know. And I think Chad too, you were on one episode last year, right?
Yeah, I think I was on... I don't remember. It was like when I just started at GSG, I was on it. I remember my beard was kind of unruly because I looked at it recently. I think it was when you guys made that awesome like video with the edit that you made, Chris.
Oh yeah, Chris.
Yeah, that's a really cool video. Everybody should go check out that. Chris made this awesome like... I don't know if it's like a case study or a commercial. It's just kind of a cute
season 2
little
recap.
Fun. Yeah, it's like a recap animation, or not animation, but spot about Ask GSG, and you kind of get a little idea what the vibe is for the show, I think, which is cool.
It's really fun. I mean, I've always enjoyed the idea that it's not, you know, there's no script, we don't know the questions going in. We just kind of look at questions and go, all right, I think I could try maybe to figure that out. So let's go see. And, well, I mean, sometimes you figure it out, sometimes you don't.
I think it's like a 50-50. 50% of the time it's like, oh, we made something cool. 50% of the time it's like, that did not work out like I was hoping. But it, you know,
that's
I think we do a good job. We do a good job in general in our tutorials, our proper tutorials, of kind of showing you like our workflow and our thought process. We don't try and make everything so polished where it's like, oh, look at the thing they magically made and I don't understand how they made it. But if you go to Ask GSG, you get to see all the mistakes, all the things, all the thought process from beginning to end, because we are literally making it up when the question is asked. So that's always fun.
Yeah. That to me, when I was at the last one with you, I was like, it felt like almost like a performance as much as it felt like instruction to me, because you kind of realize that you don't just have to answer a question. You actually have to get in the software and do it. Like, that's what you're doing that week after week after week, which is really intimidating to me, but you're used to it, which is great. But I would just be like, I don't know if I'm doing this the way I should be, but it's awesome that somebody like you is out there, because, you know, think about how much you could learn from that. I mean, if I wish that was around when I was learning 3D, because I would have tuned in every week for sure.
Yeah, we started doing something at the end of all the questions too, which is kind of looking back on how we solved it and seeing if there was another way we would approach it. Because I think there's always something like that, no matter what project you're doing, if it's a real job or if you're learning or anything, at the end of it, you're like, well, if I would have just used this from the start, it would have been way easier.
Right.
So I like that part of the show as well, where we kind of look back and go, all right, what did we learn? Yeah. What did we all learn today?
Well, that's another thing that's been great about like being on YouTube and having our videos there, is like we get a lot. I feel like we get more comments. Maybe we don't. Maybe it's the same. But I've gotten a few comments on videos that I've put out where people are like, hey, did you know that you could do this and save yourself 3 clicks? And I'm like, dude, that's awesome. And that kind of like, there's so many different ways to skin a cat in 3D that somebody's always going to have a different way, and maybe they'll even have a faster way. And to be able to kind of like get that so quickly and like, you know, it's cool. I mean,
I get that question a lot when, you know, we put out a lot of videos and tutorials and all this stuff, and people are always like, well, how did you decide to do it that way? I'm like, I didn't decide. It's just how I, that's just how I do it.
Right.
And I didn't like look at the list of the 4 ways to do something and go, I like this one. And I think this is true with most kind of creative fields, is you just kind of do it your way. And I think we even talked about this last week about the vignetting and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have a way of doing something, and it's up to other people to say, hey, did you know this exists? And you're like, oh, wow. And so like I get as much out of the comments coming back on tutorials, yeah, as I think other people get out of the tutorial, which is, oh, I didn't know that was a thing, or I didn't know that this one button solves these 10 button clicks. And
that's awesome.
That's the fun part.
That's the best part. I mean, because like I feel like in order to be good in this industry, you have to be open to trying new things and doing things differently. And if you're not, if you said that like I have my way of making a vignette and that's the way I'm going to make a vignette for the rest of my life because I never change, this is my way, like that is a really bad way to go through your career. I think you always have to be open to say like, well, how do you do it? Can I learn anything from how you make a vignette? And then you watch them and you decide, is that something that you think is better for you, or do you think it's not? And then if it is, you take the bits that work better for you and use them, or don't. But I love that. I love like watching people work, because there's always something that they do that you're, mm-hmm, like, wait, like I didn't even know that you could right click that, or, you know, alt click that or whatever. And then you walk away from it and you're like, I knew what he was going to make and I knew how to make it myself, but the way that he did it and the tools and shortcuts and the path that he took wasn't my path. And that's cool, because I'm going to learn how that path works. And that's really fun.
It's almost maybe dichotomy is the wrong word, but you almost have to have an attitude of being very confident and sure of yourself. So there is an element of like, yes, this is the way I do it, but also at the same time, open enough to new concepts, mm-hmm, so that you can change your mind quickly, you know?
Yes.
It's almost like you want to stand up, or I do this all the time. I'll stand up and say, this is how you do it. This is how I do it. This is the best way to do it. And let's go do it. And then I'm presented with new information that will change my mind.
Yeah.
And tomorrow I will stand up with just as much conviction and go, this is how you do it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure of it this time. And then again, it unfolds. So it's almost a little bit of both, like enough confidence to be able to try and break, mm-hmm, stuff and practice, but enough humility or enough like, you know, questioning or open to new things to completely look at something and go, oh, I wasn't aware of that. Let me hold on. Let me change the way I do things real quick. Okay, now this is the way you do it. Dude, I mean, that's the way to learn, man.
Yeah, you are spelling out one of my favorite books that I've ever read. It was by Ed Catmull. He's the guy that runs Pixar. And the name of the book is going to totally slip my mind, like I knew it would. But we'll put it in the comments or put it in the show description. It's a great book, and it talks about that exact concept about how creatives need to fail quickly.
Creativity Inc.
There it is. Thank you very much. So that concept of I'm going to ruin this, but in the book they talk about this like decision. Okay, there's two mountains on either side of this field. You're in the middle, and the answer to your question is on the other side of one of these mountains. What do you do? Do you sit there and you think about the clues as to which mountain it might be? Well, it might be that mountain because I see a trail, and it might have or maybe it looks like people have walked there. And like, forget all that. Just pick one and run over the mountain as fast as you can. And that way you know, okay, this is the right mountain. Or, oh, oops, it's not. I better get going the other way. But to fail quickly and be able to pivot and that's not just like from a creative POV, but that's also from a TD POV. Like, you have to be able to, like, well, let me try going down this path and building this model this way or lighting it that way. Oh, that didn't work. I'm gonna try going and just being. I'm like the ultimate pivoter, and everybody that out there that knows me and has ever worked with me knows that I pivot multiple times during a project. If it's not working, let's try this. Let's try this. Let's try this, and sometimes to a fault. But I do believe that when you're doing something in 3D or creative or whatever, you have to be willing to fail quickly and pivot. What do you guys think?
Oh, yeah.
Man, I think that's the way to think about it, is going in a direction and having the thing is even if it fails, you have that feedback now, and you have that now intuition, so that next time you're presented with two mountaintops, you have some sort of actual feeling of intuition of like which one to go towards, because you did both, right? Now you have physical experience of it. It's almost like, you know, I think there's another way to look at it too. It's to kind of ask around. Like, if you have two things and you've had friends in the past that have gone in both directions, you could actually quickly make a decision, even just by asking and going like, what do you guys use? Now, you could still then go in your own direction and go see if it's right for you. Mm-hmm. But that's the way I've been looking at a lot of decisions lately, whether it comes to solving, you know, creative problems, or even like, you know, what coffee grinder to buy. I used to like get so much information and reviews and look at this and find a forum and get really geeky about all that stuff. And with certain things, I think that's fun. I think everybody should have that thing they like dive really deep into. Mm-hmm. But for me, I was just like, guys, I know that grinding coffee is important. It's important enough to me to get a good one, but I really don't really need to go do this. So I called or texted a friend that I knew had the right answer and went in that direction. And it was a good pick. Like, I think for me, that works creatively as well, which is like, all right, let's do this the way that I think it should be. And like you said, Chad, like just knowing that if it starts to go wrong, that you could pivot quickly.
Right. Yeah. I think that's so many people that I've known and like I see, like they feel like they're failing if they change the way they're doing something, whether it's, you know,
even know what that would feel like.
I know, like, but there are people out there that, you know, will, let's say that it could be something as simple as, you know, setting up a scene and, you know, they go down some route that is obviously wrong by the time they get to that point. And they just can't come out of it. And I had this saying, you know, called the Roomba effect. I think maybe I may have mentioned it to you before, Nick. So do you know what a Roomba is? The R-O-O-M-B-A little robot that vacuums your house. Well, sometimes, you know, you'll work with an artist that is gets the Roomba effect very easily, where they'll get into a problem, into a corner. Like a Roomba, the problem with those things is, you know, the funny thing is they'll get into a corner and just bounce around and not go anywhere, and they just clean the same little piece of floor for 3 hours straight until you pick them up and you move them, and off they go. Well, there are a lot of people out there that I think fall into that trapping where they start working on a problem in 3D or 2D or whatever. Maybe it's even creative. And all of a sudden, they start bouncing around in this corner, and they can't even see that they're in the corner. The blinders come up, and they just, like, until somebody walks over and, like, physically says, you should try it like this, and they physically move them and, like, push them in another direction. You, Chris, you've never experienced that because you're not born with the Roomba gene. You don't have that gene, because as a technical director over the years, you've learned how to basically pivot and say, okay, this method doesn't work. I'm going to try this method.
So, I mean, like, I'm just thinking, even in SGSG, where I get to kind of experience this on the most rapid fire type of situation, especially since the expectations aren't that high. Like, by the end of an SGSG, I don't expect to send something out to a client. But what I'm just thinking about, like, my favorite episodes, my favorite segments, like, I did one with Nick Hopkins where somebody wanted to, like, we were modeling text, but it's supposed to look like cheese. And we did this really long, tedious method the first way, and then we tried a second way, and then we tried a Boolean way, and everyone was just failing. And we're like, let's try sculpting. I don't know much about sculpting. I think it'll be a dead end, but let's try it. And it was like, oh my God, sculpting. This is like 100%. This is the way to do it. Looks great. Like, this is beautiful. But like,
every episode is
like, let's try the third way. Let's try the fourth way. An hour and a half into it, it's like, oh, now we've got it. That's the way to do it.
And that's the key, I think, you know, for any good artist, studio, whatever, to put that time in at the beginning of a project and try all the different paths and see which one works. And because nobody says that, you know, it's okay to admit that, like, okay, that path didn't work. This kind of sucks, and we should try something else. There's no shame in that. You just, you know, one thing that I would always fight for when I was doing more production was that time at the beginning of a project to do that R&D, to figure out those problems. Because a lot of people will say, well, we don't have time to do that. We have to jump right in. This thing's due, you know, in 3 days. We got to bang this out. It doesn't matter, like, even if you can just carve out like a half a day to screw around and like try some stuff and let that eat into your schedule even a little bit, because all of that stuff you'll learn, instead of just picking a direction and saying, this is what we're doing, this is how we're going to do it, just taking that half day and just trying a bunch of different things, you'll thank yourself.
Yeah, you don't have time not to do that.
Exactly. That's totally true.
Yeah, it's like that sharpening your axe kind of idea.
Yeah.
Like, you got to start with the basics, and it'll solve every other problem. Well, and this applies, not to be that guy, but this applies to almost everything. Any time that you're too kind of one-minded or like solely focused on an idea that without looking at other options, you can go down a path for a long time and end up being very unhappy, like in your career, let's say. Like, a lot of people,
this could be your entire life that this could be happening.
Exactly. Like, a lot of people get into being
marriages, like,
marriages.
That's, like, it's a good way to live your life, I guess, but
a lot of people say, well, from marriages, you know, I've already gone to school this long to be you know, whatever, doctor, lawyer, or famous examples, but like, gotta do it now, and they ended up in this unhappy place because they haven't, like, taking the time to look around and going, like, are these the people I want to work with all day? Like, are these the people I want to hang out with?
Sunken right. cost fallacy at that point.
Yeah. And, you know, we do it too. And I do it all the time. I think it's different for different aspects of your life, but it's always important to take a step back and go, like, all right, how do other people deal and solve this? Not so that you're always a follower, like, looking, but other people have tried to solve this problem for them. And maybe you can even glean a little bit of idea of, like, who are the people that did go to school for 10 years about this and then didn't go. Let's go talk to them for a minute. Mm. Like, let's just at least hear them out to maybe hear something. Because a lot of times, once you see somebody else that is going through something similar and they say it in the way that your brain says it, you're like, I think that way. Right. And I didn't know there was another option. I didn't know that, you know, this could this could be politics too. You know, like, looking at one direction of how you thought when you were, you know, 20, and then that's the same thing of how you're going to think when you're 40 or 50 or 60 is, like, can be so one-sided, and just being mm-hmm. open to the idea that like other people have different ways of thinking about things.
It's just careers. Being open to new information, like convincing new information, like always be open to it. This can never be a bad thing.
Right. Yeah. I think that's when it really is scary, when people literally say that more information is bad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I don't want to learn about that. Like, yeah, yes, you do.
One last note there, though, I guess, say, I think the newest model of the Roomba actually creates a 3D map of the room so that it doesn't get stuck in a corner. You might need a new analogy in a few years.
I think I might. I'll have to find something else. Maybe I'll change it to those robots that carry around an iPad with somebody's face on it. I don't know what those are called, but...
And then they fall down the stairs.
Yeah. You know, that's like, if you see one of those in your office, like, come on. Like, you're going to mess with that, dude. You're going to mess with that robot.
No, you can't do anything but. Actually, that was always a problem when people would remote into the office just on their computer. Mm-hmm. The urge, Nick would log in. He wouldn't be at the mm-hmm. office, but his computer would be doing things, and he's doing some After Effects. You see a render. The urge to go over and do something to the computer is so powerful. You just want to go over and type in, like, hi, or just, like, move the mouse so that they're like, wait, why did that happen?
Yeah.
But, it's like, but then you're like, wait, why would I do that? But you want to do it so bad.
Oh, dude. We would – I was the prankster, man. I would always mess with people. Not in particular when they were remoting in, but we would, like, if you got up from your desk to go somewhere, you might come back to some stuff. Like, I remember Todd Kumpf was, we were working on, what were we working on? Some spot where we had all these car models, and he was prepping all these car models, and he had a scene file open with like 20 car models, all like, it like looked like a parking lot. And he went out to lunch. So we sat down in his machine and we made his scene file into a used car lot, complete with one of those things that you did the tutorial. Waving, yeah. We had two of those things in there. We had people walking around and sale signs and like all this stuff. And like we just hit play and like let it basically be a car lot. And he came back and he sat down. He was like, it took him a second to understand what he was looking at, because it's all there and like playing in the viewport and stuff, and it looked like a used car lot.
That's great. I thought that's a lot significantly more elaborate. I thought you were going to say you stuck like a Post-it note under his mouse.
That's an easy one. I think one of the most elaborate one was actually, you guys know Aaron Becker, right? Because he was at Bomb Camp for a while. So Aaron Becker used to work at DK, and I was there when he was there. And the old DK office had these offices where you would like triangular face each other. So your monitors, you couldn't see each other because you were all facing each other, like pointed towards the inside of a triangle kind of a thing. And Aaron sat across from, gosh, I can't remember her name. Do you remember her name, Nick? I can't remember. She was our studio manager type person, I think.
Oh, I don't remember where he was when I left. I
think. Anyway, so their monitors were back to back. So I came in one day and I'm like, I'm going to swap their mice cables and and see if they notice. So I literally like swapped their mouse cable. And then I just came in and like they always would come in at the same time. I don't know if they were near each other or something, but they both sat down and they both like start, you know, looking at their computer and working. And they were both like making this weird face, like, what is happening right now? And then so I casually walked by and I'm like, whoa, that's weird. When you move your mouse, her cursor moves, and when she moves her mouse, your cursor moves. That's weird. And like both of them were like, what the? And they like called up Ross and were like, what the hell's going on with my machine? Like, and I was laughing so hard, dude. It was so amazing. And they just could not understand what was happening.
Because the mice were both moving. That's great.
It was so
like, there's no
funny.
Correlation here.
There was no, it was like, it was moving, but like, and it had a human vibe to it, but it wasn't them. And it like, it completely messed them up. And I just remember like, both of them just like, how did you do this? And I'm like, I just swapped your cables. Like, it's funny.
The simplest things could really mess with people.
Those are
when you're
those
used to something,
dude. I love pranks. One day we'll have to talk about pranks, but
oh my god,
pranks going on the list.
Oh my god, dude, I will definitely love that show. I've done some good ones. Eric right, Anderson, if you're listening, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm already thinking of a few. All right, it's in the list. We got a list here. It looks like we might be doing this podcast a little while.
There you go.
That's good. Well, we're hitting an hour, so we should start doing the wrap-up bit.
Yeah, before we go, anything else happening? We're going to talk about Ask GSG. We are working on the new store and the new site, which should be out by the end of this month, I hope.
You guys are going crazy with working on the store.
It is busy back here, and I know you guys have been busy as well. A lot of stuff. Ask GSG season starts, and then that was a lot of working last week was getting all the last episodes or the previous seasons up for sale on our new training site, which we haven't talked a ton about, but we have a new training section on Grayscale Gorilla. And right now it's mostly the Ask GSG seasons and then David Brodeur's class, which is not currently, it's running right now, so we're not currently accepting anybody, but when it opens up again, that's where you can get more info on that.
If you're in Chicago on October 12th, on Wednesday, there's a Chicago Motion Artists meetup, and we'll be at the Whirly Ball place. Whirly Ball's fun. You drive around go-karts and play basketball pretty much.
Oh, that is the best game.
So, that is fun.
If you haven't played Whirly Ball, like, try it. It's exhausting, and you'll be sore.
They also have laser tag. Yeah, well, yeah, Whirly Ball made my butt sore just from all the crashing with bumper cars. But then a bunch of people played laser tag, and I think the group is getting a little bit older because everybody's like, oh, God, why did I do that? Like, I can't move. God. They spend the next 2 days in bed. It's like, what?
Wait, were you part of the DK paintball?
Yes.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. You want to learn how out of shape you are? Play like laser tag or paintball. Like, that will tell you how out of shape you are, man.
Instantly. You'll be like, your brain gives you enough like endorphins or whatever it is to like really fear for your safety and life. And like, it's just scary enough when you're playing paintball to where you really don't want to get hit. So you're like running and diving over things and squatting down and crawling and all these things that you never do in front of a computer all day.
Nope.
And then the next day you wake up like, what did I just do?
I feel like I got hit by a truck the next day, dude. But what happened to me?
If you were to go to a gym, let's say, and they just said, okay, you're going to do the series of exercises. You're going to run. You're going to jump over this barrel. You're going to squat. None of that would happen. Like, you would give up halfway through because there's no incentive.
Yeah.
Like, your body is like, dude, this is too hard. Like, I shouldn't be doing this. But somehow paintball removes all, you know, or any sport sometimes, you know, you could play baseball and have this feeling of just like, no, I have to go to first base.
Yep.
It is the most important thing ever right now that I beat this other person with the ball. And it overrides that whole part of your brain that's so lazy all the time. And you wake up the next day like,
oh, yeah.
Why?
Well, the adrenaline when you're paintballing and like you're going to get hurt, man. Like, this hurts when you get hit. Like, in your adrenaline.
It is the perfect amount of hurt.
Yeah, it's like your adrenaline kicks in and you're like, you start doing things that you should not be doing, you know, like you said, diving and rolling and like things that you have no business doing in your 30s or in 40s. And I don't know, man, it is fun though. But Whirly Ball is like kind of the perfect amount of that where you don't get hurt, but you still have this adrenaline because you can get hit pretty hard.
Yeah.
And what's weird about Whirly Ball is, like, I don't know if you noticed this, Chris, but, like, if you watch people playing Whirly Ball, you're like, they're not even going that fast. Like, I don't understand. Like, this does not look fast.
But you're so focused on the ball that you do not see them coming.
Yeah.
You just get hit from nowhere because you're so focused on
the goal. You can get completely blindsided, and it feels like they were going 30 miles an hour. Yeah. And if they did Whirly Ball any faster, people would probably get hurt. So it's fun. Yep. It should come out.
Also, I like those sports that nobody takes it as something that they really get good at.
Yeah.
Like, let's say you go play paintball. There's always somebody that's like, oh, yeah, I also paintball like every other weekend. And they're smoking everybody.
Yeah,
they got the gear. It's all accurate. But with Whirly Ball, like, nobody's got a Whirly Ball in their basement. You know, like, nobody's been practicing. So it's one of these weird equalizing games where you could just take an office.
80% of the people who have never played before.
Right.
And everybody
it's
else
just
played
this random
once.
Thing.
That's so true, man. You got these paintball guys that are like, you know, they're like war fanatics that are like showing up just to like experience that. And you're like, how can I possibly do anything to that guy? He's like got all the, you know, gear
camo
and stuff.
And his face is painted.
Whirly Ball, like, if you're lucky if you even, like, I didn't even, the first time I played, I had no idea what the hell I was doing. And but now that I've played once, I feel like I can go in and actually be a pretty productive member of the team. Whereas, like, the first time I played, I was like, no, it took me at least 5-10 games to, like, understand, okay, well, I should probably stay outside and be ready for a pass or whatever. But yeah, it's gonna be fun, man. I hope a lot of people play it. I haven't been to a meetup there before.
Yeah, well, we got a full hour long worth of games going last time, so
sweet. That's the thing where you could just, I could play that forever, man. I could just endlessly play it.
Any more announcements, though?
No, we got, as always, we're going to post this right now on YouTube. So if you're listening to this or watching this on YouTube, we also have this on iTunes if you want to listen to us jabber on about all this crazy stuff. We have it on iTunes. And please subscribe over there. And also, if you can rate us, if you're listening or watching this long, give us a rating over on iTunes. That helps get the word out and kind of promote the show a little bit. And other than that, and if you're listening to this on iTunes, thank you for that. We also put this on YouTube, so head over there and subscribe, because not only are these going up on YouTube, we have a ton of tutorials. Got a new tutorial going out tomorrow.
Whoop.
And we've also been starting to do on Thursdays kind of a throwback Thursday tutorial that we're kind of remastering, I guess is what I've been calling it. And we've been taking some of our favorite tutorials over the last couple years, kind of remastering them for YouTube and posting them there as well. So NBC used to have this really cheesy tagline that said, if you haven't seen it, it's new to you. And I've always tried to steal that one for these you know, they're not out of date. You know, Cinema 4D is always updating and has new stuff. But for the most part, you could still do everything you can do 3 years ago. So we've been packaging up some of our favorite tutorials and putting those on YouTube so that more people can see them, so that we can get more comments on them and really teach you some of these things over the last, 7 years that we've been posting that you may not have seen yet. So keep an eye out for that. We'll wrap this one up. Thank you again, guys, for stopping by. And thank you, listener, or viewer, watcher, for watching. So we'll see you in another Ask GSG, which is not this show, but will also be Wednesday.
I was like, where is he going with that one?
I did this last week. I think I'm good about, this is also about me starting projects. I'm great at starting projects. Finishing projects, not so great. So let's try this again. I'll see you in another episode of the GSG podcast really soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone. Bye, everybody. See you next time.